call the answer line, where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and a really mixed bag this week, including some Media Network bloopers for you. We start with receiver news, though. Yaesu Muzen is always one of the top three Japanese manufacturers in the amateur radio market, producing some of the best transceivers that money can buy. They clearly regard the shortwave broadcast market as important too, although there's only one receiver in the marketplace at any one time. Their FRG 8800 radio is currently priced at $700 in the United States, around £639 in Europe. However, this is expected to change shortly, as Yaesu have now announced a new receiver, the FRG 800, designed to compete with the Drake R8 and with the low HF 250. That's another new receiver to be launched at the start of 1993 from the UK manufacturer Lowe. The Yaesu FRG 800 is based on the receiver section of the new FT890 transceiver and should offer better dynamic range than the existing FRG 8800. The FRG 800 will be shown to the public for the first time at a giant ham radio fair in Tokyo on August the 20th. Next week in the programme, we'll be doing a comparison of two new shortwave portables that came on the market recently, the DMR-3000 from DAC Industries, who still seem to be trading out of their premises in Canoga Park, California, despite filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Low Electronics in the UK have also launched a set called the SRX-50 for around £40 sterling. Unlike sets like the HF-150, this particular radio isn't made by Lowe themselves, but imported through Hong Kong. One of the problems with many of the new portables coming on the market, though, is the limited band coverage. The use of the 11-metre band, or 25 megahertz, remains somewhat limited, especially as we head towards sunspot minimum in 1996 or 97. But back in 1987, the ITU in Geneva proposed that the broadcast bands of 31, 25, 19, 16 and 13 metres should be expanded, and a new 22-metre band, some manufacturers call it the 21-metre band, would be created. Because of the problems at the 1987 World Administrative Radio Conference, the proposed expansions of the band didn't officially take place in 89. In practice, though, many stations have already started using the expanded portions under the motto, use it or lose it. And these areas of the dial tend to be less crowded. As you may recall, from the 3rd of February to the 3rd of March this year, the ITU organised another World Administrative Radio Conference, this time in the Spanish seaside resort of Torremolinos. The important decisions affecting international radio listeners were that the shortwave broadcasting bands will be extended by 790 kHz, although the allocations won't officially come into force until the year 2007. Mind you, we've already had calls from people wanting to buy radios now that are a bit future-proof, and so they've asked us for the exact details of those extensions. So here they are. In the 49-metre band, there's another 50 kHz at the lower frequency end. 5950 kHz is extended down to 5900. Then in the 41-metre band, another 50 kHz is available to broadcasters. That's between 7300 up to 7350. If you recall, many international delegations at the WARC were disappointed that the extra room in both the 41 and 49-metre bands was simply restricted to 50 kHz per band. The news is better on 31 metres, namely 9400 up to 9500 kHz will become part of the 31-metre band. On 25 metres, 11600 to 11650 kHz, and 12050 to 12100 kilohertz will be added. So that's 100 kilohertz extra on 22 metres, 13570 to 13600 and 13800 to 13870 kilohertz will be added. That's another 100 kilohertz. Up on 19 metres, 15600 will be extended up to 15800 kilohertz for the 19 metre band, 200 kilohertz there. 16 metres, 17480 to 17550 kilohertz, 70 kilohertz will be added to the 16 metre band. And then there's a new band altogether, the 15 metre broadcast band from 18900 up to 19020 kilohertz. Now, you can be sure that many broadcasters won't wait until the year 2007 before they start to appear on these frequencies. In fact, some broadcasters, such as WEWN in Alabama, USA, say, at least in their schedules, they'll start using the 15-metre band as early as October. 18930 kilohertz is scheduled between 13 and 18 hours UTC, beamed to Europe with a 500-kilowatt transmitter in Alabama. Of course, there have been international broadcasters operating occasionally around 18 megahertz before now. Stations like the Voice of America had single sideband links to overseas relay stations on 18782.5 kilohertz. And for many years, an important out-of-band channel for the BBC's Bengali service was 18080. But remember, the new 15-metre broadcast band will be nearer 19 megahertz. Once again, 18900 run up to 19020 kilohertz. So bear those expansions in mind when you're in the market for a new shortwave receiver. Now, here's Jim Cutler with a couple of five-digit groups for you.
Thank you, Jonathan. And now for our agents in the field, attention. 3-1-3-5-7-2-4-2-2-2. End.
Right, solve that one. From this side of the Atlantic, it looks like a battle between the broadcasting bureaucracies has broken out in Washington. The United States Information Agency has an advisory commission on public diplomacy. The USIA also controls the Voice of America and Radio Marti. What's called the Board for International Broadcasting, on the other hand, controls operations like Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and Radio Free Afghanistan. On Tuesday, Tom Korologos, who chairs the Advisory Commission on Public Diplomacy, recommended that Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty and TV Marti be phased out. I asked Mr. Korologos whether this wasn't a case of one bureaucracy trying to knock out the other.
No, far from it. We advise the policymakers where we think there is duplication, it should be stopped. And what has happened to RFERL is, bless them, they did a wonderful job, and we thank them, and bravo. But now that their mission has been accomplished, in the words of Commission BIB members and others, it's time to move on. They have taken over some of the assignments and responsibilities that Voice of America has been doing. They don't call it surrogate anymore. They call it alternative broadcasting. They now broadcast How to Do It programs. They do American portraits of life in Milwaukee or life in whatever. These are all things that the VOA does. And what we're looking at it from an American taxpayer standpoint is, why do we need two radios doing the same thing during an era when private radios and commercial operations are sprouting up all over the place?
But Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty maintain their surrogate mission isn't over yet, and charged the Commission on Public Diplomacy with being very short-sighted. Pat Soek is a spokeswoman for the Board for International Broadcasting.
There is a very definite difference between the mission of Voice of America and that of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, which, as you know, are surrogate broadcast operations. This commission engaged in a so-called study in which they had no conversations with the Board for International Broadcasting or any officials at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.
But Tom Korologos maintains there wasn't any secrecy.
Oh, that's a scarecrow they throw up every time we have recommended this. We know what the budget numbers are. We know what they're doing. It's been some time, I'll admit. We had dinner with Gene Pell here in Washington a couple of years back. We know what they're doing. That's not a valid excuse.
The U.S. government is now the world's largest broadcaster, with 2,078 hours of direct broadcasting per week. The new report suggests that plans for a radio-free China, a surrogate radio service along the lines of Radio Liberty, would simply be an ineffective waste of money.
We do not need to set up another bureaucracy to broadcast into China. China today is not the Soviet Union of the 50s. China today has 395 hours a day of outside broadcasting going into China, and there's no purpose in spending American taxpayer dollars to duplicate a program that is also already functioning. And the other thing on that, technically, it's got technical problems as well. Where are you going to get the transmitters to broadcast it in there, and why take 10 more years to go through site negotiations and what have you when you can beef up the alternative broadcasting in the VOA and do it that way?
In fact, the VOA announced on Tuesday it signed an agreement with the Kuwaiti government to build a relay station there. Medium and shortwave transmitters, 11 in all, will be constructed to cover the Middle East, Central and South Asia. Radio Kuwait will also get time on the new facilities to boost its external service, severely battered during the Gulf War. Mind you, you may remember that Radio Liberty and the Voice of America have been trying to build a relay station in Israel for some time. 16 shortwave transmitters were projected, although the application ran into environmental objections, especially from ornithologists who pointed out that the transmitting antennas were right in the important migration routes for birds.
Suddenly the wall went down while they were fooling around with the environmental problems that they had with the transmitter sites, and now the purpose for that is ended. I hope that my friends at the BIB and RFERL are paranoid because we're going after that project or any of the other projects because of whatever reason they may think, but the Israeli transmitter site has been overtaken by events. The purpose of it was to broadcast into some of the Arabic countries and into that footprint that is central Russia, former Soviet Union. Well, I'm not sure how wise it is to be broadcasting Arabic services out of Israel. It really makes much more sense to take the Israeli money, turn it into a Kuwaiti transmitter, and hit the central Russian plain, and then pick up the Arabic service as well.
The Commission on Public Diplomacy argues that more money should be pumped into television. Even though CNN in Atlanta has built up a global network, they don't expect CNN to start making educational programs about agriculture or science, designed for specific audiences in quite the same way that VOA language services do it now. Still, the Commission believes that VOA radio services should be cut back.
We felt that there are just too many languages now, and that was aimed at the Congress in America. Every time you turn around for some political whim, some member of Congress decides to add a language, and so they added a Tibet language, and they added a Kurdish language, without giving any money or appropriating any funds to do this. They said, go take it out of your hide. There was a Greek language service, which I know very well. Well, they shut it down one year, and I checked into it personally because of my heritage and found out that nobody was listening. Good old shortwave, what a wonderful, wonderful thing, but it is an old technology. We feel that they ought to start looking at some of the new technologies.
And that includes television, but not Television Marti, an operation which has been beaming Spanish-language programs at Cuba from a tethered balloon high above the Florida Keys.
TV Marti is a cost problem that is absolutely ineffective as can be. They spend $25 million to broadcast every day from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Nobody watches it. Castro jams the television. And in a fit of pique, while he was at it, he decided to jam Radio Marti, which is an effective program getting news and information to the Cuban people. So rather than having a TV and a radio, we now have nothing. Yes, and I was accused yesterday and today when we made the broadcast that, oh, that means Castro will have won. He will have defeated the Colossus of the North because now they are backing away. Well, we're not backing away from anything. We're just trying to be more effective in getting our... We win if he stops jamming. And right now, 3 to 6 a.m. is not an effective way to spend $25 million for I Love Lucy reruns.
The Commission hopes its report will stimulate some debate on the future of U.S. international broadcasting. It's certainly achieved that already.
Time to check another reception report for a QSL card. Okay. 0034. Woman spoke.
Check.
0035. Man spoke.
Check.
0037. Music.
Check.
0038. Buzzing noise.
We don't broadcast buzzing noises.
Oh, reject. What do we do with this IRC?
Lunch.
You know, I often wonder when I read books for the shortwave listener how stations really check those reception details in a reception report. Is there really a giant log where everything's been painstakingly inscribed? We're currently doing a little survey about that, but in the meantime, I'd be interested in any stories about QSL verification cards you've received for transmissions you didn't hear, maybe due to a typing error on the card. But now we can announce a competition result. Not our contest, but one organised by the Amsterdam-based World Radio TV Handbook. Andy Sennett is the editor, and he's joining me now with the results. Andy.
Yes, we asked readers to answer some questions and return them to us, and a total of 4,087 valid survey questionnaires were returned by the 1st of August, which was our deadline date. And we've been astonished to note just how seriously readers of the World Radio TV Handbook take the international broadcasting business. On average, they spend some 13 hours a week listening to programmes from outside their own country. And the majority of readers have been doing this for between 15 and 20 years. We also asked them what was the maximum they'd be willing to spend on a new radio receiver. The average said it would be up to $1,174. Of course, a lot of people said they'd spend much less, around $300, and a few seemed to have the resources to spend anything up to $5,000 on a radio to last a lifetime. This explains the high interest that readers put on the equipment test reviews we publish annually in the handbook.
Right, now you offered four prizes, the top prize being a shortwave radio to the equivalent of $300, so maybe you'd like to pick the winner.
Yes, and here we have a winner, Hazem Y. Ariel, who lives in the city of Aleppo in Syria.
Right, he wins the radio, and I have three runners-up here. All of whom get a copy of the 1993 World Radio TV Handbook when it's published towards the end of the year. And one copy goes to Mr. Zdenek Elias, who lives in Czechoslovakia. The second one goes to Mohamed Anshar Rahim, who lives in Pankep in Indonesia. And the third one goes to Mrs. G.G. Little, who lives in Lubbock in Texas in the United States. I note here she's been listening to shortwave, she says, from 1958 through till 1961, when I built my first shortwave radio, and I renewed my interest on January the 19th, 1991, because I wanted an alternative source of information during the Gulf War.
Well, I'd just like to congratulate the four winners there and to thank more than 4,000 other people who took the trouble to send in their answers to these questions.
Yes, I've been paging through some of those questionnaires. Fascinating to see what came back. Also, how seriously people take shortwave radio, and also what they'll do with very simple equipment. I mean, the stations that they like listening to, even though it's on a portable radio costing maybe $10 or $20. Amazing stuff.
Indeed, I think there's a lesson there for all of us.
This week is Trash Week here on Radio Netherlands, during which many of our programmes have been looking at various aspects of trash, scientific trash up in space, trash art. And then there's Media Network. What could we think of? Well, trash in broadcasting are simply the bloopers we make. At the moment, we're making a conscious effort in our transmissions to sound human. Tuning the dial these days, there are too many stations that sound as though they were pre-programmed by a computer weeks ago, and you're simply listening to a bank of tape recorders. In the early 80s, we built a sophisticated computer system to automate some of the program sequences here at Radio Netherlands. Now we're changing the direction so that future equipment will help us make a sound more alive. Nick Meanwell is in charge of presentation here at Radio Netherlands English Service, and he's currently busy with an elaborate training program for our announcers. so that when you listen to Radio Netherlands, you'll know that you're listening to a real person and not a machine. We get a stream of response from people who like the weather information at the end of our newscasts, and we're expanding the advanced programme information we're giving on the air. Above all, people here are working in radio because they want to. That sense of fun also comes across in the studios, although, of course, some of the hiccups are cut out. Well, later this year, in fact in the last week of December, we're going to have another bloopers programme, and you're invited to contribute with cassette recordings off the wireless. If you keep a tape machine running, you're bound to hit upon some. We'll be offering some attractive prizes, too, for blooper snoopers as an incentive. By way of a preview, here's a little selection of previously unheard bloopers from the Media Network archive.
Right, let's go. I've got to do a programme at 2 o'clock. Yeah, well, don't panic. I have to have a studio going at 2 and I haven't written a script. Just keep going. You'll tag it on.
Best of the worst. A look at the lighter side of broadcasting, hosted by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, welcome to Rattle, Rattle, Rattle. This light standard is loose. Come on, take it off. Okay.
Well, SNC stands for Stasnamin Center. Stasnamin is a famous rock promoter here in the USSR. USSR, take two on that.
A new portable receiver has been launched by the Mashutsa. Oh, I knew I'd get it wrong.
During the last... Oh, start again.
Oh.
I'm sorry, can I start again? I jumped.
All right. Right, start again.
We are planning now to set up a 24-day satellite radio station under the name Sky Radio.
Okay, you think you think 24-hour a day?
Yeah, I'll take that.
24-day.
Oh.
Do that once again, because you're sounding a little bit tired.
I am very tired. I'm going to bed right now.
Media Network, a weekly survey of international communication developments. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and we start in Central America, where on Monday night at 22:30 UTC... Thank you, it's my watch.
From Monday the 19th, right the way through to... Sorry, excuse me, I'm going to have to interrupt somebody.
Yeah. Shut up.
I'm doing a DRC, please.
Right.
I beg your pardon, I've got some very rude people here.
The U.S. Industry Advisory Committee Working Group tentatively agreed to propose to the Federal Communications Commission that hams be allocated 6950 and... It sounds like I haven't read it, because I haven't read it.
And the geomagnetic field should be generally unsettled.
I can hear somebody's stomach grumbling. Maybe it's mine.
Oh, maybe it's your breakfast.
In 2 years' time, the first of two spectrum Riola... In 2 years' time, the first of two spectrum Riola... In 2 years' time, the first of two spectrum Rio de Janeiro, it's where I want to go.
It's also a rather special day today, looking on the calendar, isn't it?
It sure is. 70 days ago... Hang on. Maybe just start that again. I haven't got the right piece of paper.
No, I didn't think you did.
Mind you, if they ever decide to put some radio components inside to turn the monument into a real radio, we should be able to hear them tuning the set all the way over here in Holland.
I was going to sneeze.
The new Eurosport frequency on the DFS-1 Copernicus satellite is 11.550 gigahertz.
Not gigahertz.
So, Jonathan, yesterday the External Affairs Department of the New Zealand government... got a cough. Don't know why we always get frogs in our throats. Why can't we have a fish?
Hello from Holland. This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Survey. No, it isn't.
Media Network, the most information allowed by law.
Sound. Now, if that montage creates the false impression that lines to our propagation specialist are the most common blooper, think again. Mike Bird's pretty good at reacting to any surprise last question.
Well, finally, Mike, surprise question on you. If you had to pick three records to take with you on a desert island, what records would you take with you?
Well, music is very important in my life. First of all, I'd go for George Frederick Handel, German-born composer who lived in England, 1685 to 1759, contemporary of Bach. In 1717, Handel accepted an invitation from James Bridges, Earl of Carnarvon, later Duke of Chandos, to write some anthems, which were known as the Chandos Anthems. There are 12 anthems for choir, small orchestra, and organ continuo, and I have to say they're one of my favourite pieces of music, Jonathan.
Pretty complete off-the-air answer, don't you think? Now, back to reality, as it were, and a call to our answer line from Tony Barrett in southwest England, asking why HCJB in Quito, Ecuador, has popped up on 17535 kilohertz upper sideband. It's heard with an excellent signal in Europe, in addition to all the other frequencies that he mentioned at 2159 UTC.
Broadcasting from 9,300 feet, high in the Andes Mountains, this is HCJB, the voice of the Andes in Quito, Ecuador. We're broadcasting to Europe on 21480, 17790, and single sideband 21455 kilohertz. It's 5 p.m. in Quito, that's the same as 22 hours.
No mention is made of 17535 kilohertz. It appears to be a test. Some updates from BBC Monitoring. The Democratic Voice of Burma, which we mentioned last week, continues to broadcast daily at 14:30 to 15 hours UTC from a transmitter in Norway, but the frequency's moved up 5 kilohertz, so it's now on 17845 kilohertz. Also last week, we mentioned the Voice of Freedom from Moscow, broadcasting in Vietnamese at 14 to 15 hours UTC on 15580 kHz. A second frequency has now been observed, namely 15425 kHz. The station also has a new name, Radio Irina. The original name, Voice of Freedom from Moscow, is now used as the station's slogan. The appearance of the station appears to have caused some official reaction from Vietnam, with diplomatic pressure now to try and stop it. The Voice of Renamo, operated by the Mozambique National Resistance Movement, has started what it calls an external service. It's on 10100 kHz at 05 to 0515 hours UTC. It also announces 16 to 1615 UTC on the same frequency. Its so-called domestic service has been heard on 7380 kHz from 0515 to 06 hours UTC in Portuguese and ethnic languages. Radio Czechoslovakia has started relaying its domestic service on shortwave for Czechs and Slovaks living abroad. From 0357 until 16 hours UTC, the frequency is 5930 kHz. From 1600 UTC onwards, 5930 then carries the external service, but the domestic service relay continues just 10 kHz lower on 5920. Reception's excellent here in Holland. We made this recording on Tuesday evening around 17:30 UTC. My thanks to BBC Monitoring for those items. Arthur Cushion's on the line from Invercargill, New Zealand now. Arthur, we know that the Voice of America has abandoned plans to rebuild its Monrovia relay station in Liberia after the Civil War there. But religious station ELWA is back, isn't it?
Yes, ELWA, which was there for 37 years until the war broke out, is installing two 10-kilowatt transmitters, and they will be able to cover the 25 areas of West Africa, which they have in the past, the language areas, and they presume that'll be on fairly soon.
Arthur, those 10-kilowatt transmitters, you presume they're going to be shortwave?
Yeah, they are, yes. They're operating at the moment in Monrovia, but FM only. ELBC heard around 0655, 7275, announcements in English, and program commenced at 0700.
Thanks for those tips, Arthur. More from him next week. I notice religious station WJCR has activated its second transmitter round the clock now on 7460, in parallel with the old one on 7490. And because the antennas are beamed in different directions, it's interesting to watch what propagation does to the signals. Talking of propagation, Mike Bird's on the line now with the propagation survey over the last 7 days, and it's been bumpy, Mike.
Yes, solar activity increased slightly last week, and we experienced an upset to the geomagnetic field on Tuesday and yesterday. Solar activity ranged between low and moderate, and 4 low-strength solar flares were recorded. The largest took place on Monday when an M4 peaked at 7.06 UTC, producing a low to medium frequency fade-out. The solar flux was 97 last Thursday, and by yesterday it had climbed up to 131. The average works out to 118.2 and equals an effective sunspot number of 69, which is up on the previous week's figure of 46. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the Fredericksburg A index, ranged between 3 and 25, which represents quiet to active conditions. The field was quiet to unsettled until Tuesday, when a sudden impulse was observed at 14.08 UTC and thought to have been caused by one of the flares that erupted earlier in the week. Storm conditions started around 0 hours yesterday and lasted until midday.
Okay, what about the next 7 days?
Well, IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will remain low to moderate. Another sudden impulse to the geomagnetic field was recorded at 4.25 UTC today, and the field became active. It's expected to become stormy later today and early tomorrow. Now, hopefully conditions will quieten on Saturday, but on Sunday and Monday it's expected to become stormy again due to the passage of an equatorial coronal hole on the sun. And finally, conditions should become normal around Tuesday or Wednesday, just in time for next week's programme.
I hope so. In the meantime, from all of us, have a pleasant weekend.
Today's programme was transcribed and came to you from our studios in Radio City.
Take my glasses off and I can see something better.
Good night.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.